House File 3034, Senator Scheid. Before we begin, Senator Scheid, I apologize. We had some misinformation a couple of days ago on your wish to reconsider this bill, which apparently you did not wish to reconsider.
Well,
so,
Mr. Chairman, I was prepared to leave the committee with the bill in the shape it was in, and I did really go to a conference committee in the state office building. I wasn't trying to avoid anybody or anything.
I just understand.
Yeah, and so that's all been straightened out, I think. But you apparently voted to reconsider, so I find myself here.
So we have the bill in front of us as it was when you left.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Thomasoni.
I have an A1 amendment.
We've got two and three. We don't have one, do we?
If we could have that distributed.
I have an A1.
They are passing it out now.
Yes, we got it. I got it. Unless you want to.
We already did.
Mr. Chairman, no, it's different. And Mr. Chairman, I think this amendment does it right. And what is?
Well, it's Senator Thomas' amendment. Okay, I think we have it distributed now. Okay. Go ahead.
And what this does is instead of saying that when the plumbing board amends the plumbing code to regulate the low flush water urinals, that paragraph B that expires, this one just actually says that the legislature does what the legislature is supposed to do. It deletes the statute about the waterless urinals, and then obviously after this, it'll be up to the plumbing board to set the code and to write the rules. So what we're doing here is we're leaving in the air admittance valves. The reason for that is because they are not allowed within the plumbing code as of right now. That's something that the plumbing code could deal with later on, but the waterless urinals in this amendment right here will be taken out of the state statute, and then the plumbing board will deal with it. So I'll renew my motion to put the A1 amendment on the bill.
Okay, we have Senator Thomasoni's amendment in front of us. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I thought that the discussion the other day kind of showed, at least it showed me that maybe, you know, the legislature isn't exactly the appropriate place to be deciding building construction codes. One of the senators who knows the most about air admittance valves and waterless urinals is me, we're in trouble. So I think that this removes the prohibition on the water-free, waterless urinals, and that's the right direction to go.
Okay, we have the A1 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion, Senator Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Thomasoni or Senator Scheid, I just want to make sure I understand where this is going. This will take away the prohibition on waterless urinals, correct, Senator Thomasoni?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, that's correct.
But do we know that the plumbing board will go ahead and make rules to allow them, which is what I would like to see happen, that they will authorize waterless urinals in Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, that's my understanding.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, the plumbing board did have a meeting last week and voted to ask us to repeal actually both of these prohibitions. So I believe that they're, and I could stand corrected on this, and Mr. Rakowski is here from the department. I don't know if anyone else is. I think that the rules would need to be promulgated for the code for them to use these. But, you know, that's up to somebody in the department, I think, to clarify that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Senator Thomasoni or Senator Scheid, I know you're trying to leave the technical issues to the plumbing board.
Yes,
I wonder if it would be smart for us to put some kind of a timeline in here, you know, just to say that the code should be established, the rules should be established for waterless urinals by a certain date, just because there's been a lot of, I think, hostility to the idea, and we just want to make sure that it moves forward and that
we want to mandate everything.
We encourage that to happen.
Mr. Chairman, Tom Joachim from the department could
Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Tom Joachim, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. The Plumbing Board is currently reviewing our state plumbing code to for the next update of that code. If this happens, then they definitely would like to look at the waterless urinal issue. We've been addressed by a number of green building associations and the lead building group to that waterless urinals help conserve water, which is a plus for our environment, and so they would like to look at the provisions and put what we think fits best and the board fits best into the plumbing code for waterless urinals in the future.
Our rules
process will take us approximately a year. It usually takes about a year to 18 months, so they're about 6 months into it, so about a year from now we should have the plumbing code updated.
Okay, Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Joachim, is there a way that you could expedite the rule for the waterless urinals?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the rules process is a lengthy process. We like to get the board and the agency likes to get as much input as we can from everybody, so that's about the length of time it takes to get rules adopted. About a year.
But, Mr. Chair, Mr. Joachim, there is an expedited rules process.
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes, there is, but it isn't that much shorter to go through that process, so we've learned that in the past.
Okay, further discussion, Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps there's something short of what Senator Higgins is talking about that might provide for the use of that, some type of a device, while we're waiting for the board to enter in that, just by, we would solve that by passing a bill that had a 30-day or a 6-month or 2-year duration to fill the gap on the other.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, and I would like to just underscore that Mr. Joachim is telling me that they will not be able to be used until there's a rule. So they can't just, the rules have to be developed for this product to be allowed. So that, I mean, I know some people would like it to be sooner, but this does at least answer. A question I had was, when you repeal the prohibition, can people just go out and do these? No, because they have standards that the board wants to, you know, put into rule, and so that's important, and so that's a piece of it. But as far as rulemaking, I, you know, that's not my area of expertise. My area of expertise is right here, AAVs and waterless urinals.
Senator Foley.
Mr. Chairman, I understand where you're coming from, Senator Scheid, but realistically, why can't we make or authorize the use of these devices for 6 months or whatever?
Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chairman,
for sure.
There's a number of issues that have been brought up regarding waterless urinals, and we've seen a number of different manufacturers. The board really, and our agency really needs to review the various examples. There's multiple types of waterless urinals. Not all of them may be approved. So if we open up and just automatically approve all of them, we may come back and outlaw again some of those later on because they don't meet the provisions that we think need to meet the safety requirements and health requirements of our plumbing code.
Carefully.
Thank you. But what I see is the testimony the other day were indicated that there's a whole series of states that have these devices and are using them. So if that can happen, why can't we do that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, and a number of those states have put prohibitions on certain portions of waterless urinals to address the safety concerns. So that's what we think the plumbing board really needs to look at is what are all the types out there, what safety provisions do we need to deal with, what health conditions do we need to meet so we can approve the right standards within the state plumbing code.
Okay, further questions on Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my comment about the amendment is that just as we should not be trying to legislate rules about waterless urinals, we should not be prohibiting the Board of Plumbing from having rules about air admittance valves. I mean, I just think it's ridiculous that we think we know so much about these things that we should prohibit them from being used in the state of Minnesota. And so I think that the bill is better without this amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Tomasoni's A1 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? Senator Frederickson.
To the point that Senator Berglund was making and Assistant Commissioner Joe Akam, if this amendment is adopted, would the plumbing board come back to us with advice on air admittance valve? Would you do some at least cursory look at them and give us guidance as to whether or not we should remove the prohibition so you could do a more thorough evaluation?
Mr. Chair, Senator, if that's what you'd like, we can sure come back with a report on that. But our first area of duty would be to try and get the rules out for waterless urinals and update the upstate plumbing code and then look at air admittance valves in the future.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Joe Akam, this would not prohibit you, the board, from looking at the AAVs.
No, it would not, Senator, no.
Mr. Jacob, if you want to come back with a report, don't feel yourself under any compulsion to come back in front of this committee with a report. Further discussion on the A1 amendment. Senator Pappas.
Let's bring it to a vote for him to cry out loud.
I didn't understand that. Maybe it's just we were here late and it's early in the morning. You said that this amendment, if it's added to the bill, which prohibits air admittance valves, does not prohibit the plumbing board from studying air admittance valves.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes. It would not prohibit them from looking at it.
And then it could come back and make a recommendation that we should allow them.
If they would choose to do that, Senator, yes.
All right. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berlin.
Mr. Chairman, it could be interpreted the other way as well, that the legislature decided that the Board of Plumbing shouldn't be trying to do anything more about air admittance valves. I mean, the board has asked us to repeal this part also.
And that's in the current bill.
Right.
Total repeal.
Right. And so if we add this, then I would interpret it to mean that the legislature is giving direction to the plumbing board not to worry about doing anything regarding air admittance valves. And I just don't think that's appropriate.
Further discussion on the A1 amendment. If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Further discussion, House File 3034. Does anybody? Senator Frederickson moves that House File 3034 as amended be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Scheid.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have.
Any further action, please? I will not be far. No, I know.
Don't worry. Okay, then we have Senate File 3871. Senator Wieger is presenting on behalf of Senator Stumpf. Senator Wieger is a co-author on the bill.
We didn't have plumbing in the house.
I know, that's
the
thing. Thank you.
Pardon?
Yes, they're all savings.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Okay. Senator Wieger.
Thank you.
Say,
Mr.
We could keep it down. Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senator Stumpf had an author's amendment. This is the bill's first hearing. And
okay, what's the bill all about?
If we could, we'd be looking at a deletion of Section 1. But overall, the bill has a few cleanup provisions and also one very important provision in Section 4, which has the appropriate statutory reference for districts that are in statutory operating debt. Section 2 would have a change in the posting date for a school district's consolidated financial data report, changing that from a January to a February. The Section 3 makes a deletion for obsolete references in that statute, as well as Section 5. There's some prior to 1979 language that needs to be changed, but the primary focus would be at Section 4, where because of an error in drafting in the 2007 E-12 bill, the direction for school districts that are in statutory operating debt, there's guidance on spending guidelines, and we need to have a reference to statute section 123B.83. So the important part of the bill is to have appropriate guidance for districts that are in statutory operating debt. They're under high watch, strict procedures. Because of the error in drafting in 2007, we would make that correction. So the author's amendment would be to delete section 1, and that would be the presentation of the bill.
Chairman?
Chairman Fredrickson.
I'd move deletion of section 1.
All right. We have Senator Fredrickson's motion at the request of the author. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Wieger.
That completes my presentation.
Chairman, I'll move the bill.
Senator Metzen moves that Senate File 3871 as amended be recommended to pass.
Yeah, I've got
is there further discussion?
Prove that I'm here.
If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Then
this would have to go to rules.
We have Senate File 3835, Senator Berglund. Apparently, potentially, this is the year of the constitutional amendment. So,
third reading.
Okay, and Senator Berglund, this has been presented where, in Senator Marty's committee?
No, this is the...
This is the first hearing?
This is the first hearing. This is really just a financial issue. And so I think the committee with jurisdiction would be the Finance Committee.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this constitutional amendment would dedicate the proceeds of the Health Care Access Fund. Would be dedicated to the Minnesota Care Program and programs that provide access to underserved populations and underserved geographic areas of the state.
So the issue is a relatively simple one.
Yes.
Senator Berglund, if this is the Committee of Original Jurisdiction, I'm not sure who... that we have anybody listed as a witness, but we should offer offer the opportunity for testimony.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to call on Kristen Beckman from SEIU, and Todd Johnson from Alina.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Todd Johnson. I'm Vice President for Government Relations for Alina Hospitals and Clinics. As most of you know, Alina is a health system of 11 hospitals, 60-plus clinics. We employ about 24,000 people, 11,000 of whom are physicians, 6,000 or so are nurses. I'm speaking on behalf of our CEO, who was unable to make it today, and to just wanted to express our support for this constitutional amendment. I was rummaging around Senator Berglund this morning for some of the old buttons regarding health care, Minnesota Care passage, and I remember a button that was quite prominent 15 or 16 years ago that said health right. It was called health right. It said health right, tax wrong. And by no way do I want to endorse the idea of the property of the provider tax, rather, but we've come to the conclusion that the provider tax is not going to go away. And therefore, since it's not going to go away, we would prefer that the use of the fund stay with its original intended purpose, which was to provide health care access to people in Minnesota.
Members, my name is Kristen Beckman. I work for the Service Employees International Union. About 14,000 of our SEIU members are health care providers. So through the health care provider tax, we contribute to the health care access fund. So we feel like we have standing to speak to where the health care access fund resources should go to and how they're used. And SEIU members really believe that it should go to our health care, and we appreciate Senator Berglund's efforts to ensure that the Health Care Access Fund is used for health care. The regulations saying that it should be used for health care haven't been enforced. We really believe that what the Health Care Access Fund and the health care that it does fund makes us all healthier. We have individuals are healthier, which means our communities are healthier, which means there's less uncompensated care, which means there's less medical debt, which means just in general, our families and our communities are healthier. So we would like to see these resources that are taken out of hospitals and out of providers and out of, you know, our members stay in a paying for health care, and we appreciate you taking this measure to make sure that it does. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, are your witnesses done? Should I ask questions?
I have one more.
Oh, I'll wait.
I'd like to call next on Mary Jo George from the Minnesota Nurses Association.
Ms. George.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Jo George with the Minnesota Nurses Association, and the MNA represents 20,000 registered nurses throughout Minnesota, and we are here today to support Senate File 3835 as well. And we'd like to thank Senator Berglund for bringing the bill forward. As you know, it creates a constitutional amendment to dedicate the health care access funds for its original purpose. We believe this amendment is necessary because under current law, which does prohibit the transfers, this is clearly not being enforced. During the last several legislative sessions, hundreds of millions of dollars have been transferred out of the Health Care Access Fund to reduce deficits. And sadly, tens of thousands of Minnesotans have had their medical safety net severed for the sake of balancing the budget. The fund was originally created in 1992 as a dedicated funding source for expanding insurance coverage for low-income working individuals, and the idea was to give Minnesotans primary and preventive care. This, in turn, would lower costs to everyone by reducing the uncompensated care in hospitals and clinics, which, of course, lowers the health care costs for all of us. When we passed this financing mechanisms back in the 1990s, it wasn't without controversy, as you heard from Alina today, but providers agreed to it under assurances that would be spent for expanding health care coverage for uninsured Minnesotans. Unfortunately, we believe the original intent and integrity of this fund, which is supported by the provider tax and enrollee premiums, has been violated. Today, we still have tens of thousands of Minnesotans who need coverage and yet don't qualify for the Minnesota Care Program. But rather than raising the income limits, this administration has again proposed to use the funds for general deficit reduction. Given the state's weak economy, the declining employer benefits, and skyrocketing health care costs, we think now more than ever it's important to use these funds for expanded coverage. We think the amendment would both restore the trust, both to the providers and enrollees alike, and continue our great legacy of being able to provide the Minnesota Care Program. We think without the amendment, we may actually run the risk of losing the program. Thank you.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Berglund, the Health Care Access Fund has been running a surplus, which is why it's kind of been sitting there for the governor and others to use. If affordable health care was extended to all Minnesotans, would that kind of equal it out so the entire Health Care Access Fund would be used then? Or if not, would you lower the rates? Or would you want to have language that is a little bit more expansive so it could be used for health care, you know, to keep people healthy or, you know, Mr. combat Chairman, obesity or something?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, if the fund was being used to provide affordable health care coverage to all the uninsured Minnesotans that are eligible, we wouldn't have enough money in the fund.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's why you say increase, not provide.
Right. Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, as long as you're bringing it up, the reason we have a surplus in the Health Care Access Fund is because either through implementation by the department or vetoes by the governor or just negotiations with the governor about what could be in a bill, we have not been able to use the fund.
As it was intended.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Roblin.
Mr. Chair, and just to the witness, you said that people were being kicked off of Minnesota Care instead of having the program expanded. And it does seem to me that we have been increasing income limits, and so I'm wondering about that statement that they're being kicked off.
Mr. Chairman, I can help answer that question. In 2003, there were severe eligibility restrictions imposed on the Minnesota Care Program, severe benefit restrictions for some people in the program. And it was all done to make money available to transfer into the general fund. And we've worked over the last few years to try to restore some of those things. We still have not restored all of those cuts that were made in 2003.
Senator Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My attitude toward dedicated funds in our state constitution is not positive. I think it's not a good thing to do because it makes it harder and harder for us to balance the budget when we run into a jam. And this idea of dedicating part of our sales tax or an increased sales tax to a dedicated fund and a highway dedicated money and now this, and pretty soon Senator Pappas or somebody will come with the idea of dedicating money for education, higher education, and it just gets harder and harder to make things work out. So I don't think it's a good public policy thing to be budgeting through our state constitution.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Berlin.
This is a dedicated fund statutorily today. So, you know, what this is doing is making the promise complete.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, maybe what we ought to have is another question whether we should be taxing health care for whatever purpose.
Yeah,
people might
question.
Like to vote on that. And to actually put the tax on health care in the Constitution, never
scary.
Mind
scary.
What it's used for, is, I think, incredible.
California could copy us for a change, right?
Senator Vickerman.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, you have to remember that this health care access fund that we put together, and I was way back when we first started it. I know today the witnesses are from the metro, but this is very important to rural Minnesota, very, very important to rural Minnesota. I was at a meeting, and a gentleman wanted to talk to me for a minute, and so I said, okay, and he started crying because he's trying to take care of his son. There's not enough money without the health care access money. He can't do it. He'll have to do something, but he's willing to put in, but he needs a little help. Senator Berglund, I think it's a good idea because around this place, if there's any money, and I'm as guilty as anybody, I just grab it and use it for one of my programs. Well, I think it's a good idea. Let the people decide. Let them decide what they want to do.
Yeah. Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a process question. You know, we were told a long time ago that we had committee deadlines, and you know, it seems like the minority party has to abide by them. But I'm wondering where this bill has come from and if it actually met any committee deadlines or how, and the one before it even. What's going on with bills being heard well after deadlines?
Well, Senator Roebling, if the committee of original jurisdiction is the Finance Committee, there are no committee deadlines. We can report a bill out the last day of the session from the Finance Committee. Now, if it's a bill that originated in a policy committee, obviously it has to meet a deadline. And be referred to either the Finance or the Tax Committee. But for all the years I've been here, and for those of you who have been here longer, there's never been a committee deadline for the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair, didn't this have to go through another committee? I would think all of the other constitutional amendments this year went through other committees.
Well, Senator Berglund had asked that upon an introduction, that's why I asked her at the outset. Senator Berglund indicated at the outset that this bill is strictly a finance bill, and it's a bill that deals only with the allocation of money. It doesn't establish new policy. The Committee of Original Jurisdiction is the Finance Committee. And, you know, more often than not, that's not the case. Most finance bills that we hear have originated someplace else, but certainly occasionally there are finance bills that are simply finance bills. And this is one. Obviously, when this bill is reported to the floor if it passes out of the Rules Committee. It certainly would be subject to a motion to re-refer to a Policy Committee and arguably to the Health and Human Services Committee, possibly. And if it was re-referred to that committee from the floor, and certainly it would be in order right now. I mean, the bill is an active bill. So if somebody wanted to move to send the bill, you know, when the committee report, if this bill passes, when the committee report's on the calendar, that re-referral motion could be made. If the bill were then to pass out of the Health and Human Services Committee, it would certainly be at that time a late bill, and at some point would have to find its way to the Rules Committee for that purpose as well. But at least in terms of the referral that was made, and I guess the president has left, but in terms of when the referral was made, the request was to have it come to this committee. And again, it doesn't deal with any other kind of policy. Senator Berglin?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty's aware of this bill, and he has not requested it.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Senator Berglin. Obviously, and you can ask Ms. Gelbman to my left on the requests we get relative to bills from policy chairman, how this bill show up in the Finance Committee. I wanted to have it heard in a particular policy committee. Certainly, my general rule of thumb is that if a bill comes to the Finance Committee, because we're the full committee, I will generally send it to the divisions. I don't have to do that because the divisions are all within the Finance Committee. So in this instance, and again, a deadline would not make any difference, Senator Berglund did not think there was a need to have it in her particular finance division, but that's all within the Finance Committee. And there are no deadlines that affect anything we do within the committee, whether it be divisions or, I mean, certainly a division can't pass a bill to the floor. But within the Finance Committee, divisions or the full committee, we're not subject to a deadline.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would disagree that there isn't a policy in here. I mean, when we're talking about using the provider tax to provide affordable health care, does that mean only health insurance? I mean, could it mean other types of health services to people who could be more disabled even than those people who are at a little bit higher income level and are struggling to buy health insurance? And so, you know, health care can mean many things. It can cover many, many aspects. It doesn't just have to mean insurance, but it can be services, a variety of services for the disabled, which I think is something that is being proposed right now, is that some of this money be used for some of those other services. And so there is a policy question here.
Well, Senator Roland, if you feel there's a policy question and it's inappropriate for this committee to be the Committee of Original Jurisdiction, you can certainly talk to Senator Marty. If this bill, this is a proposed constitutional amendment, so it would have to go from here to the Rules Committee. Another committee which also is not subject to the committee deadline. If you and Senator Marty or yourself, when you know if this is on the committee reports and you think it was a wrong reference, obviously it's appropriate on the floor of the Senate to make a motion to re-refer the bill to Senator Marty's committee, or if there's some other committee that you think that should be of original jurisdiction as opposed to this committee. The bill was introduced. It was referred to this committee. I certainly can object to a bill coming to my committee. That would be unique for a committee chairman around this place. And nobody made the request to me up until now that this should have gone to another committee. Certainly, as Senator Berglund pointed out, Senator Marty did not. Senator Berglund, as the author, had requested a reference to this committee. It struck me as appropriate, and so that's why there was no referral to a policy committee. But the avenue at this point would be for a motion on the floor.
Chairman, Senator Berglund, I would move that Senate File 3835 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Rules.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, typically when we have dedicated funds in the Constitution, like the Environmental Trust Fund, we have specified an end date for so many years. Like with the ETF, it was first dedicated for 10 years, And then we came back near the end of that 10 years and passed another constitutional amendment that dedicated it for an additional 25. Before Rules Committee, I'm wondering if you'd think about putting an end date to this.
I'll think about that.
I'm thinking with all the discussion about universal health care through any number of means, maybe at some time in the future, Minnesota, it would be appropriate to not have it dedicated exclusively for Minnesota care.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fredrickson, I would love to live to see that day.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bevis.
Isn't there also a way to control the revenue going into the fund by statutorily adjusting the percentage?
Yeah.
Further discussion.
It doesn't say how much.
Okay, Senator Berglund has moved that Senate File 3835 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules. Further discussion on the motion. If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Members, I'm going to use the phrase beg your indulgence. We have one other bill on the agenda that we need to pass today, and that's Senator Betzold's omnibus pension bill. Senator Betzold is in the governor's office for the bill signing on the 35 victims bill, so a fairly important bill signing. So I'd like to ask members, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, if you need someone to move the bill, I have a provision in the bill.
We're not going to do that in the absence of Senator Betzold.
Okay. I thought you were looking for a co-author.
No. So we're to be in session at 11 o'clock. I would not anticipate bill signing to take more than a half hour. He's just down the hall. So
why don't we put him on first?
I guess I would ask members to be back here, to look to be back here about 10:30 or so, if that's okay. I apologize to minority members if you're then walking across the street and coming back. I apologize for that. Was hoping we might go a little bit more quickly and get to Senator Betzold. And I think we had scheduled this bill prior to knowing about the timing of the bill signing. So I hope members don't mind under the circumstance, but let's look to come back about 10:30, and we'll send out an email the moment we know that that's done. Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, it looks like it's a pretty fat bill. Maybe there's staff who could start explaining it to us, and we might get to that.
Senator Betzold would like to be present for presentation of the bill.
Okay. So, yeah. Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson?
Since I'm not going back over there and probably go up to the retiring room, how will I get this message? What did you say that you were going to send a message about?
Well, it's an email. We'll send we'll send somebody up to the floor, to the retiring room.
Okay.
And let people know.
Thank you.
All right. So if we can come back probably half hour or so.